A year. What is a year but a numbered lottery ticket for the whole human race? So said a man once, speaking of the arbitrary way in which we chop up our time into all sorts of units. Well, what kind of a ticket was number 1955? We shall see. It didn't win the first prize, but in this lottery, even the consolation prizes are valuable ones.
Ticket number 1955. Some of the voices, some of the events, some of the gains and losses of the year gone by, as viewed by United Nations Radio.
For millions, it was the year of the Spirit of Geneva, a time of problems not solved, but eased. The words didn't change radically, but they were softened. We in the United Nations were still continually aware of tension, but nowhere was it near the breaking point. On the very first day of the year, the character of it was being shaped in the city of Peking, China's inland capital. There, the Secretary General of the United Nations was talking to China's leaders, conveying to them the will of the General Assembly, the wish that the UN flyers who fought in the Korean War should no longer be imprisoned. A few days later, an airliner brought the UN chief executive back to Idlewild Airport. A large crowd of newsmen was there to meet him.
Secretary General Dag Hammarskjöld arrived here a few moments ago, completing his historic journey from Peking. Here's Mr. Hammarskjöld now.
My visit to Peking was the first stage in my efforts to achieve the release of the 11 flyers. The door that has been opened can be kept open, given restraint on all sides.
Such wheels turn slowly. It was some months before the first flyers were released. Four men, long imprisoned, crossed the Hong Kong frontier and the world reacted. This development meshed in with many others. Some of the darkness which had covered the world for years seemed to be lifting. Some of the clouds were being dispelled. The world as a whole, that is. In some parts of it, there was still grave trouble. Early in the year, a night battle lit up the desert sky near the biblical town of Gaza in the Holy Land. 46 people, mostly soldiers, were killed. The Armistice Commission found Israel to blame, and a few days later, the desert shooting echoed thousands of miles away in the Security Council chamber in New York. The chief of UN Truce Supervision, a Canadian officer named General E.L.M. Burns, gave his finding.
The character and extent of the operations, the damage done, and above all, the heavy casualties, which must be a subject of the deepest regret, make this the most serious clash between the two parties since the signing of the armistice agreement.
In a situation like that existing between Israel and her Arab neighbors, there is always the danger that action will provoke reaction, that a single grave, though isolated incident, might snowball into a wider frontier war. It was with such a danger clearly in mind that the Security Council president issued this charge to the Middle Eastern states.
I strongly urge both of the parties concerned to do their utmost to maintain calm and tranquility by abstaining from any use of force or otherwise aggravating the situation over which the members of the Security Council have already expressed their deep concern.
Throughout the year, tension and bloodshed continued along the Holy Land frontiers. There was constant loss of life, damage to property. An incident on the Syrian frontier in December was particularly serious. And closely linked to this matter was the unsolved problem of almost a million Arab refugees. As the year closes, there is no solution in sight. The northern spring brought relief and hope to millions of parents. In Geneva, the World Health Organization reacted to good news from America about polio.
Now it has been done. According to the press reports emanating from Ann Arbor, Michigan, a poliomyelitis vaccine has been shown to be safe and reasonably effective in a field trial on American school children.
But the World Health Organization also gave the warning that the end of the story had not yet been written. There were still unknown factors in the new vaccine. Other methods were being tried.
But the work goes on, and we have sound reasons to believe that poliomyelitis will be beaten within a few years.
In fact, throughout the year, the work of the United Nations family of agencies continued at a high level of effort. Malaria, air traffic safety, new strains of food crops, primary education. These are only a handful of the thousands of matters considered by the UN and its agencies on a worldwide basis. Thousands of technologists and consultants worked in foreign lands where their skills were urgently needed as the UN Technical Assistance Program maintained a high volume. In June, the new spirit was manifest at San Francisco. High-level spokesmen and leaders of 60 countries gathered on the American Pacific shore to mark the closing of the first 10 years of the United Nations. Many strove to recapture the idealism of 1945, the hope and promise of the victory year. Britain's new Foreign Secretary, Mr. Harold Macmillan.
Can we recover the mental outlook of 1945? Can we get back this summer onto the road of cooperation between the great powers? Can we find again here in San Francisco the inspiration and the will to work together?
It was clear that many nations shared this desire. As the San Francisco commemoration closed, all the delegates listened in silence to the words of a just plain mister of 1955. 10 years earlier, he had been the host of the Charter Conference, Mr. Harry Truman. He spoke in June of the two great forces which were shaping the world's destiny.
One of these is the United Nations, man's most ambitious attempt to keep the peace. The other is the development of nuclear science. We must use the one and harness the other so that we may combine them for the everlasting benefit of mankind.
There were far fewer spokesmen, practically no commemoration at all in Geneva 3 weeks later as the summit conference started. But everyone knew that here was a fateful and critically important meeting among President Eisenhower, Sir Anthony Eden, Monsieur Edgar Faure, and Marshal Bulganin. At the eve of the conference, our Geneva reporter told us by shortwave,
during the succeeding days, between 1,000 and 2,000 reporters will be waiting to report the news of this conference throughout the world. The peoples of the world are waiting with the hope that their discussions will point the way on the road to a surer peace.
The summit issues were the cornerstones on which world peace rested. Disarmament, East-West contacts, Germany and European security. At Geneva, there was clear-cut progress on none of these, and yet clear-cut progress was evident on all of them. As President Eisenhower said,
never once did we have a recurrence of the old method of merely talking to constituencies in terms of invective and personal abuse and nationalistic abuse.
Later in the year, the four foreign ministers came back to Geneva. It was clear that difficulties were great. From the beginning of the year, we at UN headquarters became accustomed to meeting and working with a breed of men new to our experience. A group of atomic scientists from many countries of differing ideology gathered here and worked together in preparation for a vast scientific conference at Geneva. Between the two political meetings, the Swiss city had played host to hundreds of the new diplomats, the men of atomic science. Curtains of secrecy were torn from years of study and research. A UN observer said,
quiet scholars in mathematics or in erudite nuclear physics who agreed months ago to share their thoughts with a few hundred colleagues from other lands suddenly find themselves speaking to thousands in this great hall and to many millions by radio. Their knees have buckled, and sometimes their voices have faded. Suddenly they can and must say to all the world what yesterday they could not even mention to their families.
Over 1,200 scientists, 800 observers, 600 correspondents from 72 nations talked, thought, and practically dreamt atomics for 2 weeks. American and British researchers, men who had worked for years in isolation, finally met the Russian scientists who had been doing related work and found that science, even in compartments, had led both groups to pretty much the same conclusions. Within a few years from now, power made from atomic energy would begin transforming the Earth's industrial structure. The products of nuclear workshops would heal and build in the service of man. In August, the UN Secretary General allowed himself a moment of satisfaction at the results of the atomic conference. The objectives, he said, were fully attained.
It does indeed give expression in action to the purposes and principles of the United Nations. That this encouraging beginning must be projected into the future and built upon cannot be doubted.
Science and politics combined in the fall of the year to bring a new atmosphere to the opening of the United Nations General Assembly. In accordance with tradition, the American Secretary of State was an early speaker.
A new spirit does indeed prevail, with greater flexibility and less brittleness in international relations.
It can best be described as a thaw, said New Zealand's Minister of External Affairs. It seems that a warmer spirit has come to bear on the mistrust and suspicion of the Cold War.
If we can succeed in making this spirit of cooperation a greater reality in our assembly debates, we can make the United Nations a stronger instrument for world peace.
And Australia took a realistic view. Mr. R.G. Casey.
The barometer is not yet set fair. Let us not forget that the Geneva talks did not solve any single problem. We'll discover soon enough if the Geneva spirit is really what the world has been hoping and praying for.
Once again, the annual parade of world problems passed in review before the United Nations Forum. Disarmament, the new nationalisms, the underdeveloped lands, the refugee problems, the admission of new members, the Cyprus question, West New Guinea, the trusteeship question, human rights. On each, the collective wish of the nations was brought to bear. It would take 10 programs of this length to tell even a partial story of the General Assembly. We can at best recall a few moments. Like the night France came to the great rostrum and warned members of the Assembly that if they intervened in Algeria, if they interfered in France's domestic matters, they would be bringing grave trouble on Algeria and on all the world. Monsieur Antoine Pinet spoke thus.
Look where you are going. Look where you run the risk of leading us. You are seeking to destroy the effort undertaken by France to build a free association between herself and the overseas peoples. Consciously or unconsciously, your objective is chaos.
Despite the warning, the Assembly voted then to discuss Algeria, and France withdrew from the Assembly. 8 weeks later, amid a new atmosphere, it was decided to remove the Algerian question from the agenda. Without formal vote, without formal discussion, this proposal was adopted.
The General Assembly decides not to consider further the item entitled the question of Algeria, and is therefore no longer seized of this item on the agenda of the 10th session.
And France returned. Many, including the United States delegate, Mr. Henry Cabot Lodge, called this measure one of wise statesmanship.
The motion we have just approved has led us out of a most difficult situation, fraught with danger for the United Nations. The United States was therefore glad to join in its approval.
On another issue, claimed to be a domestic one, South Africa walked out of the Assembly. The issues of race conflict in the Union of South Africa were entirely internal, said the South African spokesman.
After very serious consideration, my government have accordingly decided to recall the South African delegation and also the permanent representative to the United Nations from the present session.
As the session closed, South Africa's chair was still empty. There were 16 new seats, however, and 16 new nameplates. In the closing hours of its 10th session, a great compromise was achieved in the Assembly, and 16 nations of the world, some of them after 9 years of waiting, were voted into membership in the United Nations. Overnight, the Assembly grew by a quarter. There would be new voting alignments, new problems, new points of view, but they could not be easily assessed in the few days which remained. All were agreed that although membership was a household UN issue, here was a political event, second in importance, as one delegate put it, only to the creation of the UN. The man most often named as the author of the membership initiative was Mr. Paul Martin of Canada, but he said,
"The credit for tonight's decision, which will resound all over the world, belongs to no man or to no nation. It results in the collective effort of many nations and of many delegates."
All this, then, and much more, is what we get as a result of holding lottery ticket number 1955. There is a better spirit in the world, but many of the problems on which the old spirit rested are unresolved. The year closes with some difficulties removed, with new ones added. The worst fears are gone, others still remain. Our hopes and prayers ride now on the next drawing, and we hold ticket number 1956.
You have heard ticket number 1955, prepared and presented by United Nations Radio.